Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Michael Morris. Today we're going to be speaking about a particularly ill-advised foreign policy move by the South African government. We're also going to be discussing the national dialogue. And lastly, we're going to be talking about the pressures on South African small business. So let's start off with our first story today, and that is according to Iranian state television, South Africa's military chief, General Rudzani Mpawayana, went to Tehran yesterday, on Tuesday, for a meeting with the Iranian military themselves. And they held, well, from the reporting, which, to be clear, is from an Iranian propaganda outlet, so it can be taken with a bit of pinch of salt, but I think this is probably all accurate, was kind of some sort of love fest between South Africa and Iran. The Iranian commander, General Amir Hatami, noted that the two sides were similarly bound by anti-colonial, anti-arrogance, and justice-driven principles, hailing that South Africa had been accorded a, quote, prioritized position in the Islamic Republic's foreign policy approach. They talked about enhancing joint military cooperation, common goals. The commander of the Iranians stressed that the political alignment between Tehran and Pretoria had lent South Africa a special position in Iran's strategic outreach to Africa, and he hoped that this would translate to shared capabilities, especially in the military sphere, into concrete joint projects. The head of the South African military said that he conveyed the greetings of South Africa's president and defense minister, affirming that the Republic of South Africa and the Islamic Republic of Iran have, quote, common goals. Quote, we always stand alongside the oppressed and defenseless people of the world. Our military defense chief said that, concluded his remarks by saying there was long-standing mutual respect between Tehran and Pretoria and called for deeper ties, particularly as far as defensive cooperation was concerned. Okay, so, maybe the South African military would slightly argue with some of the characterization of that, because obviously it's meant to big up how loving and glowing this all was between them. But I cannot think, the fact that we're hanging out with the Iranian state and that the ANC clearly has people with them who are desperate to be allies with Iran, I think that's gross and immoral. But let's just step past that to the practicalities of this. Even if you did think that we needed desperately, for some stupid reason, to have an alliance with Iran, to have deeper defense cooperations, don't make it obvious, especially right now when we're at the same time trying to fix our relationship with the US. It's just an incredible unforced error. This is, for the Americans, this is, they can kind of say, okay, well, you're friendly with Russia and China, but that's because, Russia is an, historic ally of the ANC, and China is this big trading partner. But we don't really trade with Iran. This is not, there's no huge economic interest here. Their military just got smashed by the Israelis and the Americans bombing it to pieces. There's nothing to be gained from this. It's, Michael, I think I'm going to lose my mind. This is just such an idiotic move like, even if you're going to go to a function like this, send some low-level person. Don't send the chief of the military. But okay, what are your thoughts?
I mean, one can't help feeling that perhaps the Major General Rudzani Mpawayana might well have been a reluctant a reluctant recipient of this particular international shindig. But I think you're absolutely right. It is quite extraordinary. What we see here is a sort of unchastened Iran. I was trying to think of the word. Unenlightened is not really it, but that includes it. But a South Africa that just hasn't learned a couple of quite key things over the past 6 months about the conditions that we're now functioning in. We can express that, our opinions about them. We can criticize the pressures that are being brought to bear on us, whether they're based on fact or not based on fact, whatever the case might be. But we can't simply carry on conducting ourselves as if we weren't aware of the potential consequences. And I think that's the thing here. The potential consequences are very significant. The other thing, of course, is this wonderful phrase we stand alongside the oppressed and defenseless people of the world. Well, they're certainly not standing by the defenseless and oppressed people of Iran. That's for sure, the women in particular. But, you know, a question immediately comes to the fore about the oppressed and defenseless people of South Africa. Of course, not politically. We are a free society, but we are deeply oppressed and shockingly defenseless against the economic conditions which have been visited upon us by very bad policy, which has been pointed out over and over and again. We're going to come to this issue a bit later in the show. All the dangers have been warned of, right, going back 15, 20 years. So, you know, I think Terence has spoken about this quite forcibly this week as well, both of you and Terence, about, you know, how predictable so many of the consequences that we're now living with today were when these policies were brought in. And so if we, and it's perfectly true, we're not in a politically oppressed and defenseless state, but we are in one that is burdened dreadfully by economic straits, the economic straits that have been visited on us by very, very bad policy and the persistence in pursuing those very policies, the sort of dogged attachment to them. And you know, for ideological reasons, which are related very, very strongly to exactly this kind of relationship that South Africa is quite happy to see continuing, to see flourishing. Yeah. Instead of South Africa taking a stand on behalf of the oppressed and defenseless of Iran, for instance, never mind elsewhere in the world, you know, we now, by default, if one wants to be kind, standing against them. You know, standing with the actual oppressor, and so that is really a shocking thing.
Yeah, and so, it's even worse than that, of course, because Iran is not just an oppressor within its own borders; it funds militias and armies all across the Middle East. You know, even if, like the ANC, you think that Israel is the great Satan of the Middle East, that doesn't make up for the fact that Iran, you know, supports and provides the Houthis or the Hezbollah or the popular mobilization forces in Iraq, with weapons, with training, with financial support, to the detriment of its own people. This is a thing that Iranians quite often bring up in their protests, which are then violently suppressed by the state. That pension monies and this, you know, funding for state services is sent off to fund essentially imperial campaigns all across the Middle East. So, you know, we're going to really show the Americans by standing up to imperialism, by standing with another imperial power, is just so disgusting and hypocritical that, you know, sort of twists my head around. But
yeah,
the fact is that if this is some sort of misguided attempt to show the Americans, well, if you're going to be mean to us, then we're going to be mean to you, this is not going to work. It just sort of looks a bit pathetic. Really,
it does. It does. Yeah,
and just, you know, continuing idiotic missteps. If the government was, you know, was wise, even if it believes everything that our military chief said in Tehran, they should publicly reject it. just for the tactical sake. I mean, you know, not that the ANC is going to, I think, take my advice, but guys, really, this is just such an unforced error. It's spectacular.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of unforced errors, the National Dialogue, we have been very critical of it on the show. I remarked that one of the reasons I thought that National Dialogue was not particularly great was because I thought it was going to have a very constrained number of organizations who would be invited to it. You know, it seemed a lot of like the usual suspects. Well, the National Dialogue, as we've been talking about on the show over the past week, has been running into problems. Various high-profile organizations pulling out. Of course, the DA pulled out. Political parties have started to pull out. The Freedom Front Plus, Actionists, they have pulled out. And yesterday, I think it was, we received an invitation, as in we being the Institute of Race Relations, to the National Dialogue. Now, we're not going to accept that invitation, and our criticisms are... you know, you can listen to the show over the past couple of weeks. You will find out many, many criticisms of the National Dialogue. But I think the first thing to say is that, you know, for me personally, I believe that the invite to us is more one of desperation. This is very late in the day to be invited to this. This was not well thought out ahead of time. And it feels to me an awful lot like this is trying to make up for other organizations are putting out. I see Afroforum and Solidarity got invited. Also, it seems at this quite late date, and they've rejected going for some good reasons, I think. And all of this has led to the Freedom Front Plus's leader, Corné Mulder, suggesting that there be a parallel national dialogue that does not include the ANC. And I don't know. So, Michael, firstly, your thoughts on, you know, what it means that we got invited and the Solidarity and Afroforum and the other groups got invited. And secondly, I think it's silly to try and create another national dialogue. In fact, even if the national dialogue was completely sort of representative of every faction of society, I would say that it's still kind of silly because A, we already have that, it's called Parliament. And B, you know, it's not like anyone is going to say anything that we haven't already, that isn't already being said on all of the pages of in the media, that isn't being said on podcasts like ours, that isn't being said on the doorstep to voters, that isn't being said in Parliament. It just seems like an awful lot of repetition. Anyway, your thoughts on everything I've just gone on about.
So a number of different things. I think the first time that you and I spoke about the national dialogue on the show, we spoke about the kind of core issue that two things. One, that South Africans are already engaged in national dialogue. We have free speech in this country, and we use it very, very vigorously, sometimes discomfortingly so. But it is nevertheless something that we do without hesitation. As people, we argue, we fight sometimes, but we're talking, we're always talking. Talk shows and radios, call-in panels, dinner parties, braais, taverns, arguments, family feuds. You know, all of this stuff is actually the national dialogue. And then the second part is, of course, that we have free elections. We have a constitutional democracy, and we have elections, and people are elected to Parliament on the strength of the extent to which voters have been convinced one way or another to support this or that party, and then off you go. And that is the formal national dialogue which happens. So the two are very.
Think about it. It's often felt a bit to me like the ANC is sort of trying to almost recreate the Freedom Charter here, in a sense that there's going to be some sort of grand meeting that'll produce a wonderful new document to lead us into the future. But, you know, of course, one of the key differences between the creation of the Freedom Charter and today is that the Freedom Charter was created in an oppressive society where all of those freedoms that you listed did not exist. And therefore,
Exactly.
you know, having a bunch of people just kind of draw up a document at a big meeting was about as good as you could get because you didn't have all these great things that you just listed off.
No, exactly. And I think, you know, 1955, that must have been quite a dramatic moment. Indeed, it was quite a historic moment where you could more or less say people have contributed to this process, and these are basic demands, a bit like a sort of the Magna Carta in a way, the barons going to King John, I think, initially in 1215, or I think he was the first. So you know, very similar to that. Now we in fact don't need that. It's a and the idea then, you know, Corné Mulder, where one can understand, you know, he's trying to think of it's a very sort of, I can't help feeling, very typical thing of the communitarian sort of more slightly more conservative outfits who want to think in terms of, you know, getting people together and coming up with, you know, ideas that they can agree with. It's all fine, but it's just completely unnecessary, because we already have that. And what you've got to do is get out in the hustings and actually win the votes and convince people, because we have those freedoms, and to not use them is actually a much greater sin. And this indeed is core to our CEO, Dr. John Endres's response to the invitation to the National Convention. Here's a line which I think sums this up. He says, "We do not believe the national dialogue to be an appropriate or effective way of deciding on government policy." It's very plain. In a constitutional democracy, there are established and legitimate forums for such work, Parliament and elections. These institutions are mandated to reflect the will of the people and to hold government accountable. So you can read the full letter in the Daily Friend tomorrow. We are going to be publishing it. Dr. Andrews goes to some length to explain, to thank the convention for thinking of us at this late stage, but to explain why we don't think that this is the forum that is going to be efficacious for the serving the interests of South Africans. So it really does come down to that, and the idea of having another one, an alternative one, is in a way just as silly.
Especially when so many of the arguments in the country are so sort of well worn. You know, a lot of these arguments are not particularly new. We've been having a debate about BE since its inception.
Yeah,
we've been having the debate about centralization and trade and all these other things for a long time. If we were at a moment where we had some sort of great constitutional change, in like 95 or something, then that might be a more appropriate time. But now it's really just political pantomime. Yeah. It's silly. Okay. Let us go on to our last story for today. And this is kind of, I think, bring us down to earth. We've been talking about silly foreign policy stuff. We've been talking about, political posturing in the national stage. But the reality is that we do need urgent reforms of the type that we talk about in our Blueprint for Growth series, which you can find at irr.org.za if you go to the publications section of the website. And this is that ABSA and the South African Chamber of Commerce and Industry have done an index of small, medium, and micro enterprises across the country. And according to their research, they believe that approximately 50%, just over 50% of small businesses are in difficulty, in a state of contraction, at risk of closure, and nearly 1 in 10 are facing potential closure. Which, when you consider that there are thousands of small businesses across the country, that these provide employment and lifelines for millions of people, this is a disastrous state of affairs. And unfortunately, the causes of this is not some sort of bad economic wind, although those things are contributing in some ways, I think, to this. It's at the end of the day, the policy choices of government. Your thoughts, Michael?
Yes, I think one of the key things to make about small and medium-sized enterprises is that they, are generally relatively fragile, but represent the will of a fairly small body of people, and maybe in some cases a single entrepreneurial spirit to do something, to do and to succeed. In the intro to this piece in the Daily Maverick, SMMEs make up more than 90% of businesses. So we're looking at the bulk of economic activity in South Africa is represented by these relatively small organizations, run by organizational people, institutions, mostly individuals who actually want to succeed. So it's not as if these are people who are not working hard enough, or who are, really not particularly competent to get to the point of establishing a company and being kind of up and running in the society is already hard. And if they're failing, that is a terrible, terrible indictment of the environment in which they're having to try to function. I just happened to notice yesterday, we actually ran a piece on the Daily Friend this morning, one of the news pieces, responding to the news from StatsSA about the rise in unemployment. Everybody will have heard yesterday's show. I think you and John chatted about it. And this is a piece actually in the Mail and Guardian quoting analyst Sean Duthie he's a director of a company called Control Risks, and he makes this point. And this is something I wanted to make that is, in a way, the challenge is a GNU challenge now. It's not necessarily only an ANC one. He makes the point that Statistics South Africa figures show the unemployment rise. He said that this is alarming considering that there was cautious optimism after last year's election that the government of national unity would raise investor confidence and employment opportunities. Instead, we have seen unemployment rise quarter on quarter since the GNU was formed, showing investor confidence is much lower than was initially thought, and business is still wary about going forward with long-term investments, which would necessitate more hiring. And I think here we have another kind of reflection on the same thing that you described. An economic environment involving millions of people across the economy, and there just is not the confidence, the belief that we can invest, that we're going to be safe, that we can plan for the next 6 months, none of that. And that really is, this comes right back to you, not having things like the National Dialogue, but having a very serious-minded argument in Parliament and on the hustings about what exactly we mean to do to turn South Africa around, which is the challenge.
Indeed. All right. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you found this show interesting, and we will be back tomorrow with The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a wonderful day.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.